Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the All Stats Aren't We review of the Spurs away game. I'm Darren Driver, positioning myself alongside some of the good stuff that happened in the game, usually referring to one of the players that I like. And I'm here with Martin Riley in the second place in, where I'll usually refer to something silly one of the players did in the game. And finally, taking the spot where I turn my attention to the owners and the manager, who it's fair to say I like less than the players, it's Tom Alderson. Tolder, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, thanks. I'm tired, but yeah, pretty good. I'm after this, I'm kind of looking forward to a bit of a break from Leeds United, to be honest. I'm going to mostly ignore the World Cup, so that'll be quite nice.
Tom's bringing the energy tonight, Martin, isn't he? How are you doing? How are you doing just now?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I've literally just finished this tea. I was a little bit late coming to record. Had a nice pizza and some garlic bread. So I'm full up, and that's always me when I'm at my happiest, is when I've got some food in my belly. And other than that, got a bit wet earlier in the awful weather that we've had. So yeah, it's been a good fun day.
So tea, in this instance, Martin, you're referring to an evening meal eaten by someone who's from Yorkshire, right?
Exactly, yes.
That's fine.
Customary.
Yeah, definitely. And I see you've also brought the joy by talking about the weather, which is good, isn't it? So I'm glad that we've started on a nice, positive, upbeat note before we go through to talk about the Spurs game, which I shall summarise now. So Leeds started the game in their usual 4-2-3-1, and Spurs started the game in a 3-4-3. The pattern of the first half really was Spurs probing and making progress down the Leeds left hand side and making dangerous situations but not many chances, and Leeds scoring from two of their three major first half attacks. Leeds scored first through Somerville after Aronson beat Højbjerg in a physical duel in a central area. And then Spurs equalised through the most absurd VAR decision you could possibly imagine. Now, I don't normally talk about refereeing decisions or VAR decisions at all because they're really boring, but on this occasion I am going to make an exception because it was a particularly egregious VAR decision. Anyway, soon thereafter, Rodrigo scored after a corner had been headed back into the box with a really smart finish. In the second half, Leeds seemed to change to a 4-3-3 mid-block off the ball, which I think seemed to prevent Spurs from moving the ball laterally in defensive areas and building up at the back as easily. Spurs were still dangerous down the Leeds left-hand side, though, and all three goals in the second half for Spurs came down that side. The Spurs goal for 2-2 was messy from a defensive point of view, with the defence falling asleep at a throw-in and the ball falling to a free man on the edge of the box, and Melier and Christensen really got in each other's way. Leeds had a good period of possession though from 2-2, holding the ball in more advanced areas and keeping Spurs more or less under control, and this eventually led to Rodrigo making it 3-2 with another really good finish. And at this point, Leeds do what Leeds do when they go a goal up late in the game, and brought on Luke Ayling to go 5-4-1 and sat deeper, much deeper, which seemed to encourage Spurs, who quickly scored their third and fourth goals down the Leeds left-hand side for the winner. So Leeds eventually lost the game 4-3. And it was an interesting game, I think. There's some good stuff to talk about here. And I'm going to start with the interrogation immediately. Tom, I'm going to come to you first on this one. So I kind of morassed the question, really. So how did you see the game? Did Leeds play well? Or was it just one of those games which was down to a coin toss? I guess what I'm trying to get at, Tom, is would a win have been deserved had we managed to hold on for one?
I personally wouldn't have said a win was deserved. I think the best way to answer this question for me is Leeds played well in bits, Spurs played well in bits, and that's just the way that game goes. Like, one team wasn't noticeably better or worse than the other, I thought. I think, yeah, a coin toss is pretty much another good summary of that game. But yeah, I wouldn't have said we were so much better that we deserved to win it. It did also feel harsh to lose it. So yeah, it's a really tough one to make of, like, how to feel after that game. But I don't know what you guys think about that one,
Martin. What do you think? Because I slightly disagree with Tom. I thought Spurs. It's an interesting thing because I think probably aesthetics are playing into it a little bit, because I think Spurs looked like the better, more threatening, more coherent team, but without necessarily turning that. I mean, perhaps up until, you know, this, maybe in the first half particularly, it didn't look to me like they made a huge number of chances. But I was watching the game thinking they're just like better than us. But I think that's partly inherently to do with Leeds' style, right?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's a lot of things in the first half which I did enjoy. Sorry, I just got a bit of phlegm in my throat there. And especially some of the attacks we built fit straight into the tactical style which Mars wants to employ, and it was quite effective in that when we did win the ball, we did look to attack with fluidity and we did get into some threatening areas. Spurs didn't create too many chances, like you say, in the first half. There was one chance which fell to Emerson Royale, who I think made a total hash of it. Again, it was one of those things, if it would have landed to a different player, one of their attackers, then it would have been a goal for definite, and it would have changed the game massively. So I think if things could have went either way in the first half with those sort of things. But I do think over the first half, we probably did get the better of them. I think we made the better chances in the first half. Somerville had another chance that he could have scored. I think not. Maybe about half an hour, 35 minutes in. It was quite similar to the first goal, really, which, so if we would have taken that as well, then it would have been even better for us.
It's probably more of a transitional attack, that one, wasn't it, for the second one than the first one? But Yeah, exactly.
It was two of it. He did quite well of it, but he just didn't get quite as lucky. Lloris came out a bit better for that one, I think. But yeah, for the overall spread of the game, I think that the match result is probably a fair one. I think maybe a draw you could push for being possibly fairer, at least if you base it purely on the XG. Neither team created more than 2 XG for the chances that were on play. And Spurs got 1.8, we got 1.1. So both teams were massively over the XG, which was on display. Mm. But yeah, I think we got what we deserve, really, overall.
And I guess for me, Tom, our old friend repeatability comes into this, because if you look at the Spurs attacks, you can see what they're trying to do, right? They're trying to get in behind our fullbacks and pull back towards the edge of the box. And that chance that Emerson Royal had in the first half came from a similar situation. Whereas with the Leeds attacks that tend to be successful, there's no clear observable aesthetic pattern to them in the same way. And I think that whilst we did create a number of chances, it always felt to me like Spurs getting in the way that they were consistently doing, even in the first half when they weren't really making the chances, was eventually going to bear fruit for them.
Yeah, it's I think what with the way the Spurs attacked, like, it actually played into was looking good in that sort of third quarter of the game, because we stopped them doing those repeatable things. Whereas, yeah, like you say, we at the moment we are well. We've been attacking reasonably well in recent games, but it is all just kind of a bit vibesy, because it's the young players like Somerville and Nonto, and like Aronson played well recently. It's not because the tactics that we're employing are
leading to us having a good attacking play. Just these individuals are all playing very well for this run of games, and that's kind of got what we scored. What, 9 goals in 3 games, which is in the Premier League against the opposition we played, is a good run. So it is annoying that we haven't got that repeatable way of playing, and it generally is going to lead to these sort of games which where they're very much end to end because of the lack of repeatability of the attacking actions.
Martin, Tom says, I mean, Tom, it doesn't seem to be entirely sure whether we're attacking well at the moment. And to be honest, I'm not, because we are scoring a lot of goals. But it does feel to me like intrinsically like we're running hot at the moment and probably scoring more than the chances we've created probably truly deserve. However, I am aware that I'm extremely cynical about this style of play. So it's likely that I'm going to look for those kind of... I'm going to look at it in that way. So how do you see it? Are we actually attacking well at the moment or not?
Well, in the last few games, we have had some moments where we have attacked well, but it's mainly been falling against the bigger sides who give us the space, which we can attack into. If you look at the Bournemouth game, we struggled to make chances from open play massively. There was only really the final winning goal, which was created from an open play transitional moment. And that's because Bournemouth were trying to get something more out of the game. They were going for the win the same as we were. But other than those, sometimes we look good, sometimes we don't look good. It's part of the nature of the way this attacks are built. And it'll mean that if teams don't give us that space, we won't create as many chances. So it's so dependent on our opposition, how we create an attack, that it's hard to say if we are attacking well at the moment, because it's so variable and too many things can happen to change that. I know that's football in general, but on top of the usual chaos of football, we add that extra layer of chaos, which just confuses things even more.
Well, I'll just add to that like in the Liverpool and Bournemouth games, we were afforded space. And we were attacked well in those games because we were afforded space. And I think actually against Spurs, while we were afforded space, it was more they did sit in a bit. So I actually think this is Saturday was arguably our best attacking performance of the season, because they sat in and we still created chances rather than in. It's more aesthetic. Well, aesthetically again, it's the sort of style you want to see. But it's the first example I can think of where we've actually almost broken down a team or managed to score against a team that has sat in rather than with relying on them to give us space.
Interesting. I guess even with that though, Tom, like I know it's a bit of a folly to use single game XG as been indicative of anything, but it does feel like we scored more than the chances we created probably deserved. So good. Okay, not good that you agree. Good that I understand what you think is what I mean by that. You know, I don't insist that everyone agrees with me. Because hardly anyone does. Anyway, second question. Martin, Spurs caused a lot of problems down our left, specifically in a way that I've not really seen a team target one area of our defensive unit quite as much as Spurs. What were they doing that was causing us so many problems?
It was quite a simple thing, really. Spurs had a game plan which they enacted very early in the game. This was to have some slow build-up play, drawing us across to our right side before quickly switching the play to the left. Especially in the opening 20 minutes, there was so many times where there was players in acres of space, or alternatively just have a 2v1 situation, which happens so often during the game. As the half wore on, it wasn't as bad. We sort of did get to grips with it a little bit and weren't leaving quite as much space. But then in the second half, that came back again. So we clearly didn't learn much from the first half. And I do wonder at times if this is exacerbated, because you see every now and again it'll pan to Marsh and you'll see him making the motion to bring the team more narrow. You see him doing that. So I think sometimes the players will try to adjust to the space that they're leaving, and then he draws them back into keeping the narrow shape to fit with his pressing system. And I think Spurs were deliberately targeting that flank because of Kulusevski. He is a very dangerous player for a team like us who leave that much space. And that's the reason why they targeted that flank, I believe, which it did mean that he could really just do what he does best, which is running at defenders either by themselves or even sometimes having Emerson Royale next to him to attack with. So it's just not an ideal situation.
I mean, even Eric Dyer was doing the overlapping centre-back routine a couple few times, which I really felt relaxed when he got the ball, to be honest. Tom, some of the screenshots from this game showing just how narrow and compact Leeds United were at times defensively were extraordinary, weren't they?
Oh, God, it's enough to keep up at night, isn't it? Bloody hell. You just like, you see it. It's like, I saw that the Marsh sort of Marshisms as well, where he's like putting his hands narrow together, and you're like, no, this is bad because Kulusevski is in absolutely miles of space, and the nearest defender is Stroik, and he's in the other, he's like near the centre of the pitch. So, no, it's horrible to see. And like, there isn't really a way around it, is there? Because for us to play well, for us to do what Marsh wants us to do, we have to play narrow, but then we see players like Kulusevski and Eric Dyer having loads of space, and it's just, yeah, I don't really know what there is that we can do about it.
I know, but we don't have to compress everybody into 1/6 of the pitch, do we? Like, surely there's a middle position where we don't have to all crowd around the ball like primary school players.
Well, we kind of saw that in the second half, didn't we? Like, where the three in midfield could sort of spread across, and then when the back four's across, like, actually, we cover most of the defensive parts of the pitch sometimes, and it looks okay, and then we go back to the really narrow stuff, and we sit in, and it looks really bad. So there is stuff there. It's just, it's not our main aim to do it, which is really baffling.
And then from Martin, from 3-2, we saw Marsh go to the 5-4-1 in a bid to hold the lead. And I guess as I said, it looked to me like that meant we immediately dropped 20 yards deeper down the pitch. How much did that contribute to Spurs turning the result around, in your view?
I don't necessarily feel the 5-4-1 shape itself contributed to the third and fourth goal, but the issue was, like you mentioned there, that how much deeper we were in that in that shape. So I guess that goes hand in hand with what he's doing with that change in shape. But I still feel that the more overriding factor in those third and fourth goals was, one, the quality of Spurs' attack, which was just so much better comparatively to our defence, which doesn't help. I mean, there was, from the time that we went to a 5-4-1, I think it was about 90 seconds after that where we conceded. So I don't think there was enough time for that real change to make too much difference to be that, but there was so much space in front of the box, which was what it came from. It was cleared out and then hit from the edge of the box. So I think Spurs really put their foot on the gas after they went down, because it was late on in the game. They knew they had to do something now, or they'll come away with no points. And then the fourth was just, it was very good attacking movement, but there was also too much aggressiveness from our players in trying to keep to the men. And that's something which Marsh has mentioned before, is when we are, how can we stop conceding these goals to drop leads? And he mentioned about aggressiveness. And to me, that seems what happened for their fourth goal was, we were aggressively trying to get to players. At times, even looked like it was back to man marking. I know that could just been Liam Cooper getting a bit too tight to his man, which we know he has a quality of doing.
So what did you make of this, Tom? Because like, I have to be honest, as soon as we do the change to a five at the back, I just immediately get angry with it, because it just feels like we are determined to invite opponents onto us, inviting them to attack us, taking our attacking threat away, taking the pressing manoeuvres that for periods in the second half did seem to be preventing Spurs from attacking effectively. It felt that we gave up the momentum in the game and gave up the advantage in the game and gave up the little bit of dominance that we'd managed to build over a 15-minute period and just kind of completely handed the initiative back to Spurs. Is that how you saw it?
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that. I think while there was only 90 seconds between the change in formation, the definite change I saw in that 90 seconds was the pressing, and that the Spurs players just suddenly, one, they could sort of sit in our half a bit. they were not pressed on the ball as much as they were before that, which was causing problems for them to like do the automism. There's a better word for it that they want to do, and suddenly it was like the play, like Kane can drop deep, he's got space, he can play it in, and then they can get around the back, and it's like they're doing back to where they were in the first half, which was causing those problems. So Marsh kind of talks about the match plan or game plan or whatever it is quite a lot, and I wonder if it's like when we go to the 5-4-1, we drop off and we don't press, so the formation might not have had effects, but the pressing might have had an effect. And I agree with you, it really annoys me when I see it. The main one that always comes to my head when I hear it is the Norwich game at the end of last year. Like, we should have killed that game, and suddenly it's like, let's sit in and hold on to it, invite them on, they equalise in the 80th minute or something. It never seems to work. I don't think it's I know we're bad at holding on to leads, but we were on top for the sort of 20 minutes in the second half, and if we could have just carried on doing that for the whole second half, and you could argue that we'd have been looking at a win here, but instead we were like, right, well, this has worked, now let's go to something else, which really is a baffling decision to me.
Far be it from me to invoke the ghost of Bielsa on this podcast, but his approach on this was always that you keep doing the things that have got you into the good position in the game and not change them. And it feels to me like Marsh has got a very different way of managing the game. And arguably, you know, there were times when that kind of we keep going approach cost leads under Bielsa, but it seems to me that this approach of sinking back into our own box and trying to defend the box effectively is just going to keep costing us under Marsh. And I'd much rather that we were braver. It feels regressive to me, like really regressive to me. And I really don't like it.
Can anyone actually think of an example where it's worked?
Martin, can you think of a time when it's worked?
I mean, we have to have a lead for this to work, but like, so that doesn't happen very often.
There probably will be times when it has happened, but there's not any that I can think of off the top of my head. I know, just talking about holding on to leads, since the Chelsea game, I've seen this tweet, and I'm not sure if you guys have seen this one as well, but since the Chelsea game, we've held on to leads for 14 minutes, 6 minutes, 10 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 6 minutes, 15 minutes, 8 minutes, and 4 minutes. So that doesn't really speak to them. I'm not to that very well. I hope that answers what you're asking there.
Did you remember those numbers, Martin, because you weren't reading that off anything? Or were you just saying random numbers?
No, I was reading
it. Did you remember the sequence?
Yeah, I've got the tweet in front of me. It was from Ben_Paul, I believe. That's where I got those numbers from.
Because I did genuinely think you'd just kind of reeled off this.
Like Rain Man.
And I was it was exactly.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Exactly. Anyway, referring to that 20-minute spell that you mentioned there, Tom, and that I mentioned as well, Wiggy, one of our listeners, says, I felt we held the ball for longer periods more than I've seen under Marsh. Did anyone else notice that? And I guess I just wanted to ask you to talk about what we did differently in that 20-minute period of the game, because it did look sort of coherent for about 20 minutes there. What did you see, Tom, that looked different? And what were Spurs doing that allowed us to do it as well? I think there's definitely something in there too.
I think from our side, obviously, as you mentioned in the summary, we changed to a 4-3-3. And I kind of felt that stops Spurs being able to go side to side and just get around us really easily. It also kind of, it allowed Somerville to naturally go drift wider, I saw. So when we were attacking them, it was like there was width there for the first time I've ever seen under Marsh. And when they were winning the ball back, they couldn't just go around us. So it was like we could then just sort of almost pin them in, and the pressing was working very effectively, and they then couldn't do the little things they like to do to build up and attack. So whilst there wasn't like huge chances created, we did manage to just pin them in, which I think away at a big 16, you can't really ask for much more than that. Spurs did kind of sit in and invite it, I thought, a bit, but a Conte team is always going to do that to an extent. But I think the fact that they sat in and then could have made chances was quite impressive. Consider the fixture.
And I, Martin, from what Tom said there, he said Spurs sat in, and I guess for me, Spurs are not a team that are going to particularly have a high press, right? So if you can get them into a situation where you're able to manoeuvre the ball around, you are going to have periods of the game perhaps where it looks like you're having quite a bit of success against them, because they're not going to commit to a high press. But I also did think that like particularly Rocker used the ball really well in some parts of that spell, and it did look like we had something happening there for a minute.
Yeah, I'd agree that moment for about 15-20 minutes, we did do very, very well at controlling the game in that instance. I'm not sure if that is something that Marsh is working on, which I hope it is. It would be nice to be able to control games in that sort of fashion. And since it has caused us so many problems when we are expected to hold onto the ball, it would make sense to work on that. So I hope that is something which has been worked on and maybe we'll see improve after the World Cup break. But also, like has been mentioned already, Conte sides do allow the teams to keep hold of the ball sometimes. And this period came after 2-2, right?
That's right, yeah, between 2-2 and 3-2. Yeah.
So at that point, I think Conte was happy for us to keep hold of the ball a little bit more, knowing that we'll leave space for them to try to attack. But we did do well to stop them from getting those moments. So that is also a good sign too. But the overall possession stats, I think we had 45% possession. So while that is more possession than we've seen against other big six sides, it's still obviously not the lion's share of possession. But if you compare it to like when we was against Liverpool, we had 32% possession, and against Chelsea, we had 39% possession. So it's still more than those sides. So yeah, there was more periods of possession, especially that moment.
Okay, let's move on to the big questions. I've got a couple of big questions here. So first one from 1-2-3 Leeds Go. Are we going to be in a perpetual cycle of Marsh almost getting sacked, then winning a couple of games, then almost getting sacked again, Martin?
Well, it's quite possibly true. The style of play we have under Marsh hasn't been able to consistently produce results against teams of all sizes. But with our proclivity for doing well against bigger sides, this will mean that it's seen as acceptable for most fans for us to maybe struggle for five games, but then confidence is boosted by a surprise result against a big side. So we'll have periods where we have three or four disappointing results against teams around our level, then we'll surprise, say, Man City. I don't think that's going to happen this season, Haaland. But yes, it is quite well a possibility that this sort of trend could continue for the rest of the season, unless something does change and we are able to control games against the teams around our level.
Mm. What do you make of this one, Tom? Are you looking forward to the rest of the season in this with these pattern? Stop smirking. I can see you smirking. You're not looking forward to it, are you, Tom? Come on, be honest with us.
No, I'm not. When I saw this question, I thought I'm gonna just look through the fixtures and see what happens. And I thought next fixtures: City at home, probable loss; Newcastle away, probable loss; West Ham at home, probable loss; Villa away, could lose with the way that Emery will set them up. Then we've got a run of Brentford at home, Forest away, Manchester United at home. That sounds like three potential Jesse Marsh winnable games. So yeah, I can see it happening, because that run to me looks like it's Jesse Marsh all over.
Did you say that Brentford was a winnable game? Is that the same Brentford that beat us 5-2 like a few weeks ago?
So maybe he loses to Brentford and then beats Forest and maybe nabs a draw against Man United. Who knows? And then we lose to Everton away, and yeah. Shall I keep going or shall I just stop?
No. I think you've made your point. I agree with 1, 2, 3 leads go here. I think the best we can hope for is lower mid table, right? In this season, and mid table teams are inherently inconsistent. But this is inconsistency with some quite obvious flaws in the system of the team. So it's going to be really interesting to see whether Marsh can keep the wolf from the door for any extended periods of time, or whether he is just going to, you know, keep always been on a knife edge. Because I guess that's similar to our games, right? We're always on a knife edge. So it stands to reason that if your games are always on a knife edge, then the coach is always going to be consistently on a knife edge unless he manages to look 3 or 4 games in a row.
Yeah, I think for me it's just that this run of games, the players have kept Marsh in the job. Like, the players playing well, and we have got good enough players that, yeah, like you say, lower mid table is possible. So over a run of the second half of the season, these players are going to do enough to keep him in the job at certain times. So yeah, it's a definitely, I completely agree with it as well. It's a definite scenario that I can see happening.
Okie dokes. And then we've got a question from Crombopolis Matthew, which says, I continually see Marsh and his online defenders. Irony. The irony was in the tweet, not in me saying that. Pointing to individual errors in relation to our defensive issues. Do you think that our defensive structure or lack thereof makes such errors more likely? If so, why? And can they ever be solved in Marsh's system? So, Martin, is this a system thing? Is it a player thing? Is it both? Is it neither? What's going on?
Well, for me, blaming the result entirely on individual errors is something which is so easy for both fans and managers to do. And you can see why. It's something which is staring you in the face. You see, oh, this player did X thing, which caused a goal. And that'll be something which is easily pointable. And managers like Lampard love to dig players out in public. And it's an easy get out.
But Martin, I agree with you. It's also easy for pundits, right? Because if you're a pundit on Match of the Day, are you going to spend 20 minutes analysing the structure of the team? Or are you just going to go, Liam Cooper was crap there, Robin Koch was crap there? Which are you more likely to do?
Well, exactly. Pundits, I think Ian Wright pointed out a few things which we did wrong. I believe I saw some people talking about on Match of the Day. So the pundits especially will be guilty of this, because it's easier for them to point to these individual mistakes and say, yeah, this is the reason why they lost. And also, for the past few games, the performances of Liam Cooper hasn't been good for a while. And we also saw Robin Koch drop a rare L as well. So, but the main thing for me is that the system also has to take a chunk of the blame as well, especially knowing the weaknesses in said system, which means that defenders are put under more pressure because there's more space when teams are smart and they exploit the problems in our side, which is the narrowness, and switching players to the other side makes defenders have to backpedal a little bit more, having to deal with sometimes two attackers at the same time, which will obviously cause mistakes. And it's a part of the manager's responsibility is knowing your players and knowing what's going to put them under the most pressure to make these mistakes, because it will happen. The only way I think of to improve this and to see less of these mistakes is either changing the system or bringing in a higher calibre of defender. But I think even with a higher calibre defender, without some tweaks to this system, there would still be problems. When Marsh was at RB Leipzig, he had similar problems as well. And this is sort of thing that they have much higher calibre of defenders comparable to the league there. And he still had problems conceding a lot of goals. So I'm not sure if that answers it well. But yeah, that's my 2 cents.
No, I think it's a good answer. Tom, what do you make of this? Because it does look to me like playing as a defender in this team. I mean, probably particularly playing as a fullback in this team, you're on a bit of a hide into nothing. But even then, when the fullbacks push a bit higher, the ball comes over the top. It's the central defenders who've got to fill in that wide space, right? They've got to go out and try and hold up the attacker there. So it means that they're then isolated quite often against players or against one or two players. So, like, yeah, where do you stand on this one?
I'm very much agree with what Martin said. That I think what Marsh thinks is that if we execute his system perfectly, it will work. But the reality is, you're not going to always execute a system perfectly. You see that at the big teams. It's not just a caliber of players that happens. And because his system leaves these players open to having to always be perfect and always win their individual battles, you are going to see mistakes, and that's going to lead to goals. So I do think it is more of a system thing. That if you can't hold on to leads and you're glaring, or there's always like massive areas in the wide areas. Mm. That's a system thing. That's not individuals always coming across. I know there's times like when you see like a fullback being too far one side and the wing is open, but like. There is something about the system that is causing players having to make these individual errors for me.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at Virgil van Dijk at Liverpool this season, he's making a number of errors. He's arguably the best central defender in the world, and I think it's no coincidence that the Liverpool system as a whole is less effective, right? So if arguably the best central defender in the world is going to struggle with systematic issues in front of him and make mistakes as a result of it, it does stand to reason that Liam Cooper, as much as I love him, is also going to make mistakes and probably at a higher frequency than Virgil van Dijk, right? What do you reckon, Martin?
Yeah, well, yeah. Exactly. Systemic problems can cause problems for even the best players in the world. If something isn't working right in the system, if some parts of it isn't working as well. The Liverpool example you gave there is a great example, because in the past, Van Dijk maybe hasn't had as much defending to do and that in previous seasons because of how good Liverpool's press was, how good their structure was. They didn't allow as much pressure onto them, and this season Van Dijk has seen more pressure, more defending to do, which has led to some mistakes from him and other players in the side. So it's just something that you can't immediately say, oh, we lost this because this player was crap. That's it. That's all it is. This player was crap. The system's fine. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Nothing. Nothing, I say. And then when you've got Marsh individually blaming young players for this, saying it's a problem of youth and maturity and young players will make mistakes, but it wasn't any of the young players who made these mistakes. Yeah, in the last game, Sam Greenwood did dally on the ball a little bit, and that led to one of theirs. But in this game, I don't believe it was the young players who were at fault, unless anyone can think of any that they did. But to me, it's the reverse. Mm. The young players are, in a way, rescuing wins from nothing. And yeah,
if you put Pascal Struyck in the City team, everyone would realise that Pascal Struyck's absolutely amazing because he wouldn't be put in situations where he's going to be causing many problems. If you put your favourite person, John Stones, Darren, in the Leeds team, I think he would probably look
well. He looks pretty awful in the City team defensively a lot of the time.
Exactly. So like, it's just. Like, if you put a good system in front of a player, they're probably going to look quite good. Whereas if you put a piece of rubbish in front of them, they're probably going to look quite bad.
I have to say, I am a bit less on that John Stones train. I was just saying that because, you know, it's a bit, isn't it? It's a bit. Darren doesn't like John Stones is a bit, right? We all know it.
Yeah.
I actually don't, Matt. I don't.
I think it's just the fact that you said you hated John Stones, and then yeah,
I was just trying to motivate him. Anyway, let's. That's. I think that's enough talking about the Spurs game. It's another defeat on the books. Let's quickly reflect on the first half of the season. So, Tom, how do you sum up the first? What? How many games is it? Some games. How do you sum up the first? First part of the season so far. The first 14 games.
Inconsistent is the word I'm going to use. Mm. I still just don't feel like we've really got going. Like, I don't think we ever will. For me, it's been. I've not really enjoyed it, and I will admit that it's mainly the aesthetics thing. I can get over results, but I just don't enjoy this style of football. I'm not really sure what else I can add on that because I don't think I ever will.
Excellent. Martin?
Similar. The consistency is an issue. Consistently creating attacks is an issue for me. And also, the same as Taldo there, I don't enjoy this football as well, which does not help things when I'm trying to objectively sum up how the season has been so far. But I do think we are the position we are in the table, is correct. I don't think there's any problems with where we are in the table. We're not being shortchanged. I think we are exactly where we should be at this point. And we'll say that some things I've enjoyed, which has been some of the young players' performances. I'm very, very happy that Crescencio Somerville is starting to come into his groove, and that's very good to see. I think 4 goals in a row now, isn't it? And yeah, it's just great to see where everyone loves a young player breaking into the first team, especially one who we've enjoyed so much in the under-21s football. Then he's finally showing what he can do in arguably the biggest league in the world.
For sure, yeah. And I don't think I need to say what I think. I think everyone could probably guess. So you're looking forward to the World Cup, Martin?
International football is not something I've always loved for many reasons. I enjoyed the last Euros primarily because we had Calvin Phillips in for England, and that I enjoyed. But this time, I'm not feeling it as much. I'm not sure what it is. I will still watch a lot of football because it's something to watch. And also hopefully there'll be some nice underdog performances and some team will get quite high. But no, I'm not massively looking forward to it. But I am looking forward to the absence of Leeds for a little bit, just to give my mental state a bit of a break.
Taldo?
Yeah, I'm not particularly looking forward to the World Cup, to be honest. For me, the World Cup and the Euros is like a time when my mates who aren't Leeds fans, we get together and we very much just vibes it. We don't analyse games like I do. We all do for Leeds. We just sit in a beer garden, we watch the football, and like, we're not in a beer garden. The team is rubbish. It shouldn't even be hosting the country it's in. It's in winter. It's in the middle of a season. I'm just not got any excitement about it whatsoever.
Yeah, and I normally love the World Cup. I normally don't really like international football, but I do always really enjoy the World Cup, and I'm boycotting it. I can't support the World Cup happening in Qatar. I can't, in good conscience, sit there and watch it. For me, I don't judge anybody else who will. I think that's entirely their choice. But my choice is that I'm just not going to have any part of it. So I'm actually going to get 6 weeks off thinking about football at all, which won't do me any harm, unless I decide to watch Notts County, which I probably will, instead of anything else, because I'd really
come to a Stockport game.
I might come and watch a Stockport game, but I might also go and watch Notts County, because I do very much enjoy their style of play. Okay, well, that feels like that, really. Thanks for being with us for the last few months, listeners. We will be taking a break now until the end of December, where we will be back to preview the City game. We may put some other things in if anybody comes up with a good idea of things that they want to talk about. But other than that, I'm anticipating that we will take a good long break and be back with a preview of the City game. So until then, all that remains for me to do is to say thank you very much, Taldo.
Thank you, Darren.
And thank you, Martin.
Cheers, Darren.
And to you, dear listener. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.